We can post it on the internet. New attendee, are you ready? Roast a cushion.
I think we are.
Good evening, friends.
Good evening.
We're starting our second series of classes today. Richard Capsule has more secret information for you about the esoteric aspect of the vital body, so I'll let him introduce his topic now.
Today we're going to talk about the chemical ether. We will talk a little bit about its place in the cosmos and some about its place in the human vital body. And toward the end, we'll talk specifically about that with regard to astrology. It will be mildly convoluted. All right, the chemical ether is occupied almost exclusively with form and matter in the mineral kingdom. It is responsible for holding together the compounds of the mineral kingdom, those that we see like the minerals and those that we don't see like carbon dioxide. It is also responsible for the formation and decomposition of the beings that have etheric vital bodies, such as plants, animals, and humans. It is also responsible for the transformation of different elements within the mineral kingdom, which is usually done through the plant kingdom. At least so von Helmond found, and researchers since him also agree with that. Now, the Rosicrucian philosophy teaches that the chemical ether, like all of the other ethers, is polarized. It is obvious that the attraction of opposite poles is what holds compounds together. That is the bonding force. Polar attraction is also what is responsible for the interactions between all chemicals. Now, much can be learned about the chemical ether by studying chemistry and by studying atomic physics. However, we have to be a little bit careful about that because the outlook of materialistic science is a little bit different from ours. It's skewed because of the beliefs that they have. This is because material science, like most of us, is not clairvoyant. Scientists, very rare that you find clairvoyant scientists, and they keep their mouth shut. However, there are Nobel Prize winners that study astrology, and that have, there's a Nobel chemist that has openly put his, he said, if you want to know about me, this is how you know about me. Passed out his horoscope. And this was to a body of skeptical material scientists. So, the best way is to develop etheric vision and to see the chemical ether straightforward. Not being able to do that, using your intuition and studying a subject and conjecturing about it, can do a lot to carry your understanding of the chemical ether. Now, even though scientists are working indirectly and working in the blind, they do a pretty good job. All of these technical things that we work with, our recorders, as an example, were made without clairvoyant vision. Because you don't have to see everything in order to be able to use it. All of us can drive a car, but very few have the capacity to be an engineer to design a car. And very few have the capacity to understand what is involved in an automobile right down to the very last atom. We have a long way to go with things like that. Now, from very simple observation of reality, we can infer that what the Rosicrucian philosophy teaches about the chemical ether is true and what it means. One of the things that we want to study, by the end of these talks, you're going to be so sick of the ethers that you're going to say, I'm not going to study that anymore. But we can see that all of the ethers, like everything in the entire spirit-matter pole, has life and form. In each of the ethers, there are, especially the chemical ether, there are atomic forms. But those forms are also the vehicle of a flux of etheric life that passes through them. It's known by different names. Science knows the energy that flows through the chemical ether forms, knows it as heat, or electricity, or ionic energy, or nuclear energy. Those are all forms of the flux that passes through the chemical ether. It is the application of this energy that accomplishes all transformations that take place in compounds. Now, when we look at the bodies of living beings and not just minerals, if we look at plants, animals, and humans, we can see that the forms that are produced out of the minerals are different from those in the pure mineral kingdom. Even the chemical actions in organic chemistry, of the chemistry of living things, is different than the chemistry of the way things work in pure minerals. For example, in most organic interactions, they're much slower. We'll talk a bit about that later on in the second talk, in the philosophy talk. But that's just an example of the fact that when something has an organized vital body, there is a much higher degree of organization. It isn't just atoms in compounds. There are compounds in cells. And the cellular organization is much larger and much more unwieldy, so most organic interactions take place more slowly. With the Rosicrucian philosophy teaches that the reason why things are different among living things is because plants, animals, and humans have worked long enough with the chemical region of the ethers in to take it and bring it into an organized body. To some extent, when we become familiar with any realm or any sub-realm, we make it part of ourselves. And when we make it part of ourselves, we are a law unto our own with it, so that what takes place in an individual vital body or in a complex of a vital body and a dense physical body, what takes place is dependent on the character of the individual that has built that. We all know that even for powerful drugs, the reaction of different people to the same drug is different. It is because the character that expresses itself through the physical etheric personality is different. Even things, you know, what do they say about the ancient Iranians? With regard to food, they say of the ancient Iranians, one man's Mede is another man's Persian. Okay, that didn't go over. Didn't go over too well. All right. The physical body is built into a mold that is comprised of chemical and life ether. And that it is that mold, that formation, that keeps the body as a constant as different atoms pass in and out of this. Now, all of this is dependent on the nature of the atoms. There is a peculiarity about the center of the periodic table, which we're going to talk about more a little bit later, that it is capable of acting both as a metal and a non-metal. And because of its valency, it can form very big and intricate chains. We're talking about hydrocarbons. And they're capable of doing all sorts of different things. In fact, there's a recent discovery that has everybody agog in the scientific world, and that is that on a mountaintop, in a very rare place that is internationally in the hands of the Indians, and you cannot go there to this mountain without the permission and presence of the Indians. You can't take anything but your breath back from there unless the Indians allow it. But on this mountaintop, there is a cave. And in that cave, there are organisms. They're more like what do they call the chelate organisms? I don't have to get into it that deeply, but they are microorganisms that are silicon-based rather than carbon-based. Of course, all the UFO people said, we know this all along because the UFOs can come from very hot planets and they're thinking they live in bodies like ours. But it is because silicon is in that same central region of the periodic table. The silicon can form the same kinds of rings and complex structures that carbon does. So this is an interesting thing. There have been three expeditions to see this microorganism, and it all depends on the Indians whether anybody will be able to bring anything back, because they don't allow it. It's sacred territory to them.
Okay.
What?
Where is it located?
It's located in Venezuela. It's a very steep mountain, and it is one of those evolutionary centers. There are, I'm sure you're looking for something to Google. No problem. Just put in Venezuela and put in silicon microorganisms, and you'll find about the expeditions that have gone there. You might pick up a lot of other things that you didn't necessarily want to pick up also, but that's the way the internet is. Now, in the next talk in this series, we're going to talk about the astrology of the life ether in the vital body and vitalization and things like that. In this one, we're going to talk about the physical body and the chemical ether. And in doing that, we have done as we always do in these things. We've opened up an enormous topic. That's the way it is with spiritual things. Once you start studying them, you find there is so much there that you feel like you could study it forever and ever. We get a hunger, and we feel like we could be satisfied studying almost 24 hours a day. But it doesn't work that way. There is something that, unless we take what we know and use it, it becomes dull to us. It's like the movies. If you go to a movie once in a while, it'll have a really strong impression on you. But if you go every day to a movie like a critic has to do, it's a ho-hum kind of affair. And the same thing we're having this week, we're having a spiritual festival of trying to gather as much information as we can about the ethers, but we can't do that every day. It would lose its savor for us. So, all right, this is meant to be an astrology talk, so let's begin with some very simple elementary astrological examples of the many things about the astrology of the chemical ether. And And we're only going to touch on these things. And it's always my hope that when I bring things like this up, that people will take them and study on their own and carry out all of the things that I am unable to carry out, either because of inability or because I have all kinds of time or something like that. Now, in the mineral kingdom, where we find the chemical ether in its purest state, there are evolutions that take place. For example, there is the evolution of the mineral kingdom through the elements. And that evolution is shown in the periodic table. The chemical periodic table. There's some excellent periodic tables on the web. This afternoon I looked at some of them just to make sure that I was not giving out specious information and was double-checking things. The columns of the periodic table relate to the seven periods of the creation. What takes place in macrocosm takes place in microcosm. So that going from the metals across the middle line that has carbon and silicon and germanium and tin and even lead is in that same family. It's interesting, the alchemy of it, but we don't have time for that. The rows horizontally in the periodic table also indicate the periods of evolution, but in a different way. And shows them with greater and greater ramifications. So it turns out that each planet has a place on the periodic chart, both in the metals and in the nonmetals. And this is something that is worthy of a lot of study because it relates to things like biochemistry and our physical health and things like that. For example, iron is a metallic element relating to Mars. If you get on the other side of carbon, sulfur is also ruled by Mars, and it's a non-metallic martial element. If you look on one side of the chart, quicksilver is ruled by Mercury. If you get on the other side of the carbon, we find that it is phosphorus that is ruled by Mercury. And so there are, for each of the planets, there are elements on either side of the periodic chart. For example, Saturn falls very close to the middle in that it rules lead as its metallic state. But if you move further to the left, a quasi-metal, calcium, is ruled by Saturn. So each one has different rulerships from the same planet and has different qualities. And by studying chemistry and studying the way the different elements interact, both in our bodies and as we see them in nature, we can come into a wonderful, simple understanding of chemistry and of astrology, and of on a lower octave, even of the elements that we find in a higher way in our psychology. So the astrology of studying the chemical ether is a good Abecedarian way to come to an understanding of things. All right, we're trying to get at the chemical ether of the human vital body. So let's look at some other very simple examples. The dense physical body, which is formed by the chemical ether and maintained by the chemical ether, is composed primarily of what are called the hydrocarbons. There are four primary elements that make up most of our dense physical body. They are hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon. And they work together to produce all of the organic chemistry that our bodies are made of. Each of these is associated with an element. And like with the Sphinx, they're usually associated with the fixed sign element of each of the four elements. Obviously, hydrogen relates to Leo and to fire. It's the very simple beginning of everything. When oxygen is added and it becomes visible light, becomes intelligible light, that is what is indicated by Aquarius. When there is a combustion of oxygen and hydrogen, what is produced is water. And from the condensation and recondensation of water, out comes mineral. This is basic nebular hypothesis. This is what the cosmology of the Rosicrucian cosmo conception is about. The Saturn period is warm. The Sun period is lit and it's bright. And the Moon period is wet. And out of the recycling that begins in the Moon period is precipitated the Earth period. This is shown very simply. So the watery element, obviously, is Scorpio. But Scorpio is a martial sign, and Mars rules the nitrous amines in the body, and that means the proteins. So we find that Scorpio rules the proteins and nitrogen within the system as we're looking at it now, in the same way that oxygen is ruled by Aquarius and hydrogen is ruled by Leo. The final element is the very stable carbon, which clearly is Taurus, which is probably the most stable of all of the four fixed signs or of all of the signs of the zodiac. So we can see, if we want to study hydrocarbons, and you can actually get into the rings and chains and such of hydrocarbons, and you can begin to understand some fascinating things. Now, this isn't in the notes, but I feel like taking a little side trip so that this is a little more spontaneous. In pigments, there are three primary colors: red, yellow, and blue. In beams of light, if you've ever worked with your with the old cathode ray type of tube for your computer, there are three colors of beams of light. There's blue, there is red, and there is green. And all the colors are made from those three beams of light, or from those three pigments, depending on what you're looking at. And it turns out that in the hydrocarbons there is a common form, very similar, but what is in the center of that form makes the compound be altogether different. For example, if you put cobalt in the center of this carbon ring, it becomes blue. And it is then cobalamin, which is vitamin B12. If you take the cobalt out and you put magnesium in the same place, it turns green, like the second color, red, blue, and green. It becomes green and it is chlorophyll. If you take the magnesium out and you put iron in, it becomes red. And it is then hemoglobin. So that there is, you know, like the anemia that there is between, you know, like there are some forms of anemia where a person doesn't have enough cobalamin, enough vitamin B12. All of these things are beautifully shown in the chemistry and the way they relate to the light that comes from the sun in the beams, and it's right in their form. That's a little aside. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but it's just one of those fascinating things to look into. If we look at the dense physical body of an infant, it's soft. It's rubbery. The bones are trainable. They're bendable. In fact, I was laid on my back too much when I was a little child, and I have a flat spot in the back of my head. I hate messing around with hair, and if my head weren't so ugly and it didn't draw so much attention, I'd shave it all off. But as life goes on, as there is more experience, we take on more and more calcium, so that with an older person, if you look at the skin is tough and the bones become brittle, and they break more easily. Now, the body of a human, because we have a desire body, when we become sexually potent, when we become capable of reproduction, is the time when the desire body is born. And when the desire body is born, it puts a curb on growth. Otherwise, we would be like the plants, which have no desire body, and as long as they live, they grow. And so this is what takes place in our body. Our body then is a set shape. That shape was determined from the archetype of the thought form before we came to birth. But the matrix is made of life ether and chemical ether, and it's capable of changing shape. So that if you look at the body of a baby, of an infant, it's round and soft, and the features really are not highly distinguished. Whereas if you take the features of a young adult, the face is still soft and smooth, but you can see all of the features. And then if you take a person in old age, the features are extremely well defined, and a person, you know, all of us, I guess, as we get old, we get a little geeky, and men get funny necks and things like that. So what we're talking about here is that the form of the vital body that determines the shape of the physical body is elastic. And it is elastic according to what we do to it. If we starve it, it dies. If we overeat, and overeat a lot, it becomes fat. And again, the features become somewhat indistinguishable. If we are extreme about one kind of food or another, it shows in our body. For example, if we eat foods that are very hard and toxic on the liver, we develop more of a yellow pallor. Now, it would be nice to talk about the astrology of food and the astrology of herbs, but that's way, way too big for a short one-hour talk. So let's do something else and look at the chemical ether component of our dense physical body and look at it in a different way. We've said that the building does not end with adulthood. It doesn't get any bigger, but it does change shape. Now this is done by the basic matrix holding things together at the positive pole of the chemical ether. New element is new food, new minerals are attracted into the physical body, and at the negative pole, things are kicked out. And the whole process is called metabolism. Metabolism is how, when our body is running, how it attracts things to it, how it uses them, how it burns them, and how it eliminates them. Now, the part at the positive pole of the reflecting ether that does the attraction is called anabolism. All of this is taking place all the time. This is one of those miracles, again, of physiology. Metabolism is such that in our cells there is what is called a Krebs cycle that has to do with the use of phosphorus compounds and a few other compounds, that the names of which I don't always remember, but it is measured in 10,000 times a second. that you're metabolizing things in your body. So like when you're throwing off heat right now, some of that is etheric heat, some of that is caloric heat, but that all depends on the metabolism. The part where we discharge or we waste things that we don't use is called catabolism. So we have anabolism and catabolism, which produce metabolism. But it isn't just a simple chemistry. It's a chemistry that is changed by the character of the individual. We put the stamp of our consciousness on our physical bodies, and it affects everything that takes place in our physical bodies. So let's look at some examples of this. Now, some people are energetic. You can see them, their foot's moving all the time. They're restless, they're energetic, and they can't stay sitting. I can usually tell the Aries in the talk because the Aries in the talk have the hardest time sitting still. These are people that can eat enormous quantities of food and not get fat because they're metabolizing it very quickly. And they are very active. Now, it's dangerous to generalize, but you can tell from the structure of the body, from the attitude of consciousness, that people with this type of metabolism are martial people. Other people are very peaceful, and they have a very slow metabolic rate. And the kinds of foods that they choose are foods that are fairly high calorically, like oils and things of that nature. And they are peaceful, and they stay with things and bring them to perfection. And these are people that do not necessarily become corpulent, but they become rounded, pleasantly rounded. Again, this is another kind of a generalization, but this type of metabolism is Venusian. So you can tell the Venusian people in their liking for sweets or oils or things like that, and the peace that they have about things. They like peace so much that they don't want any kind of struggle of any kind. Then there are other people who are nervous and worrisome, and they have a tension about them. And these are people that are not so muscular as the people who have the martial stamp about them, but they're usually downright skinny. And some of them almost look as though they are consumptive. And again, looking at generalizations, depending on the nature of worrisomeness or the nature of the fretfulness, these people are generally Saturnine or Mercurial, because the consciousness that they have determines the way the metabolism works. Now, some people are extremely relaxed, and they're very, very positive, and they are easygoing about everything, and because of this, they have extremely slow metabolisms, and they use food very efficiently, and they like to store it because they like to have a cushion to sit on. And they usually like very high caloric food. And again, in generalization, this is a Jupiterian kind of metabolism. Now, our society feels that we have to treat ourselves. And we indulge. And we indulge in foods because the fats carry everything with them. They're very tasty. And we like things sweet. And because we eat a lot of fat and because we eat a lot of sugar, we are becoming all like Jupiterian metabolisms. We're getting round and big and things like that. Now, there are other factors in metabolism, both physiological factors and psychological and astrological, but again, we don't have time to go into it. Now, I hope that people like yourselves develop an interest in this and look into it for yourselves and carry it much further than these little snippets that we're offering now. We can learn a lot about individuals by just watching how they eat, what they eat, and such. Now, we're going to look at horoscopes again of famous people. But when you study famous people, if you look in their biographies, you know, like for people like Sigmund Freud, for example, there's a 3-volume biography, you don't hear anything about the metabolism of Sigmund Freud. When we're talking about metabolism and things like this, unless we have doctor's charts or unless we have nutritional tests that have been done, we don't know what the metabolism is and from that how we can infer their consciousness. So we have to use something else. And this is where things become convoluted. We're finally getting to horoscopes. After a little bit, we'll get to the first one. The way it works is we have a blissful ignorance about most of the organs of our body. We don't know we have a liver until something goes wrong with the liver. And when something goes wrong with it, we become acutely aware of what it is because there's pain. So very often, we don't know of the existence of something unless there is pain or unless we have some sort of malfunction that requires us to learn either by working with our diet or our lifestyle or our attitude or all of the above. We don't know what is necessary for each of the organs of our body. Now, following this reasoning and enlarging it to the whole body is how we're going to get at the chemical ether in the human vital body. Strange as it may seem, there is a condition that takes place wherein the chemical ether of the vital body is all alone by itself and it is stressed. There is a physical condition that indicates this. And from this is the way we can get in the back door to understand a little bit about the chemical ether or about people who have abused the chemical ether. Now, the vital body is different from the dense physical body. In the dense physical body, you can't really separate the solids, liquids, and gases from each other. But in the vital body, you can separate the ethers from each other. At least partially. There are states of consciousness or activities whereby you can separate one ether from the others. And when that is done, certain kinds of things happen. This is because the vital body is sort of knit together. But it isn't like knotting and friction that makes the knitting hold together. It is by the attraction and the interpenetrations of attractions so that it is possible as an act of consciousness to unravel the vital body to some extent. Now, this can be done in different ways. Suppose we separate the reflecting ether from the other 3 ethers and the dense physical body. Then we have someone who is out of touch with the physical world. We have someone who can go deep, deep into thought or see all kinds of pictures in the reflecting ether but can't bring them through to the world. Now, this actually happens in some people who are profound but retreative thinkers. This is sort of an ivory tower kind of mentality. There's something escapist, and this happens in some forms of mental illness. We don't have time to really go into that, but that's a really exciting subject because you can see all of the forms of mental illness in the relationship of the different four different bodies that we have, and it's amazingly fascinating. That obviously is an unhealthy way to separate or stratify the ethers. The preferred way is to separate the reflecting ether and the light ether away from the life ether and the chemical ether. These two higher ethers, the light and reflecting, are called soul ethers because they have more to do with consciousness and memory and thought and things like that, that they can leave and go with the higher vehicles, and we can put our consciousness into them and go away. In the meantime, we can leave the life and chemical ethers behind to maintain the body, to clean it up, and do all of those wonderful things that happen during sleep. So that's the preferred way. Now, sometimes it happens that we leave the three higher ethers, leave with the higher vehicles of the spirit, and only the chemical ether is left behind. And that's the case that we're looking for. Now, there are several ways that this occurs, but there's something that is common to all of them. For example, if a person does certain kind of rhythmic breathing exercises and develops a flow in their etheric body, they can cause a separation whereby the lower mineral-like chemical ether is held back, and because it can't keep up at the vibratory rate with the others, and the other ethers pull away. This is what happens. This is a consequence of materialistic thinking. This is what happens to people who believe that they can breathe themselves into heaven. You can't breathe yourself into heaven. In order to have the heavenly consciousness, you have to become spiritually. Even with rapid techniques, it's still a very slow but a wonderful experience of growing into spirituality. So this is what happens. This is one of the ways that it happens. Another way that it happens is if a person is extremely materialistic, not only acquisitively so, but believe only in the things of the senses and get very locked into the physical, the spirit can't abide by that and can't stay with that, and this causes a partial rupture of the three higher ethers from the chemical ether. This condition is what is called consumption. And the modern name for that is tuberculosis. And because it is called consumption, because there is a wasting away of the body, because the higher parts of it are basically can't be interested in the dense physical body. Now, some people are going to say when they hear this, but that tuberculosis is caused by a bacterium. There is no disagreement in that. The predisposition, the attitude that attracts that bacterium, the tuberculosis attitude exists before the bacterium is there. Probably all of us have been in our lives many times exposed to tuberculosis bacteria and have not taken them on because we don't have that attitude. So we can see that common to both ways, either by breathing exercises, and that doesn't mean that all breathing exercises are bad things or that they're unhealthy. It just means the ones that we try to use mechanically and try to use that to rev ourselves up and to take heaven by storm, those are the breathing exercises we're talking about. Or with extreme materialism, where a person is very hard set, the spirit can't abide by that, and tuberculosis is a consequence. I've checked this out. I have a friend who is a pathologist. And when I mentioned that tuberculosis existed before the bacterium was there, his eyes lit up because he had that same kind of notion that this, you know, but it was, you know, wasn't weird like we are, I guess. All right, we're ready to look a little bit at horoscopes. We'll do the same thing we did last night. First put up the name so that everybody can see who it is. This is obviously somebody who is an extreme materialist, Karl Marx. We're only going to look at two horoscopes tonight. We're almost done already. We've only got 10 minutes to get this through. Now, selecting these horoscopes is a very interesting thing. I was profligate and spent a lot of money and bought a database of 50,000 horoscopes. And then what you do is you set it up and you run through and look at all of the horoscopes that have or the owners had tuberculosis in their life. And then you compare them to what it would be over all time. You know, like if anybody were born at any time, you know, this aspect would be present or that aspect would be present. And if you find some things above the expected norm, well, we want this a little higher, don't we? That is something that is statistically significant. Now, in doing this, I found that there are three astrological conditions that are likely to be present with people who have consumption or tuberculosis. In this horoscope, all three are present. So it's not surprising. This is the kind of horoscope that's peachy that you look for if you wanting to give an example. You find one that gives you everything all in once. The first indicator of a likelihood to tuberculosis is a concentration in earth signs, and the earth signs rule the chemical ether. Each of the elements relates to one of the ethers. We're going to talk about that in future talks, but it's clear that the chemical ether, which used to be called the melancholic ether, is associated with the earth signs. So in this case, we find four planets are in earth signs when the average would be about 2.5 planets in an element. Now, anyone who has worked much with Taurus or with astrology knows that Taurus people are very likely to be sensate people. Things that they can touch, especially, or taste, are things that are real to them. I have a brother that has a number of planets and the ascendant in Taurus, and for years he struggled against my notion. He thought I was crazy for studying mysticism. That is, until his daughter committed suicide with a pistol, and he said to himself, she accused me of not listening to her. Are there other people that have accused me of the same thing? And after that, my brother actually read the Cosmo Conception, and I read it well, and came up with all kinds of questions and wanted follow-ups on certain parts of it. So can't be too hard on the Taurians. In this case, the sun and the moon are conjoined in Taurus. This is clearly someone that is sensate. They are trine to Jupiter in Capricorn. So this is another indication of a great earthiness. And we find that they are sextile to Neptune in Pisces. So these are positive aspects, but nonetheless, he's still materialistic. The second thing that is common to consumptives more than would be expected of all overall people is that there is a definite tendency toward depression. That melancholia that was talked about. In this case, Saturn is in the first house, which is enough to indicate depression on its own. Saturn is in Pisces, which makes it even more prone to depression. And then we look at Pluto in the first house, which is also in Pisces, and it is square to Neptune, which is very clearly a depressive thing. So this is a person who is multiply depressed from several different factors in the chart. Now, the word depression means to push down. In the psychological etiology of depression, there are different things that produce depression. For example, if a person represses feelings, especially feelings of anger, they often become depressed. But the one common thing to all of the etiologies is depression means to push down. Saturn, who is the lord of depression, is the planet that tries to deepen us, does not want us to be shallow. Do you know that 1/4 of the population in the United States takes antidepressants? And this is because in our society, we have a very shallow, materialistic outlook about the world. And with that shallow materialism, we need to be made deeper to break through the materialism. But what do? We take antidepressants, which is relying on material to take care of a problem that is basically psychological, and the way we think about things is really crazy. The third factor, which is not quite as strong, but it is, still has a statistical significance, is that usually there is an affliction between Saturn and Uranus. And this gets us into some things that are more deep than I want to go into right now. Saturn and Uranus are co-rulers of Aquarius, but they are very different from each other. Saturn is a planet of old things, of tradition, of history, of longevity in time, whereas Uranus likes everything new. Saturn likes things heavy. Uranus likes things light. It even likes things to be metastable. Now, Uranus rules the pituitary. And the pituitary body is the captain of the endocrine system. And the endocrine system, according to the Rosicrucian philosophy, is not part of the physical body. It is a condensation or a solidification of the vital body. And so the endocrines do control the physical body, but not in the way that we do with our waking self-consciousness through the brain. They communicate with each other and affect each other only through the bloodstream, through the etheric component of the bloodstream. So that in the we have hormonal secretions in the bloodstream, they raise or lower the metabolism and things like this. This all ties together. Each of the endocrine glands is ruled by a planet, and so we've gotten into something very, very large here. The pituitary body is the one exception. The pituitary body has two lobes. We're going to come back to this later on in the week. And one lobe is connected to the nervous system. So the pituitary body is the bridge between the consciousness in the dense physical body that is not through the etheric, that relates to the etheric body through the endocrine system. So when there is a struggle between Saturn, which rules the minerals, the physical stuff, and Uranus, which is the captain of the vital body and of the endocrine system, there is some kind of struggle, and that struggle is often manifest as the deposition of the physical body due to the higher ethers not being able to work with the chemical ether in the materialism. So we have all three in this horoscope. Saturn is square to Uranus. So we just have somebody here. Saturn is in the first house, and Saturn rules history. He loved history. You know, he has a whole evolution of history relative to materialism. It was an economic history. But his theories of history are only materialistic. He didn't even like anything that was close to spiritual. He didn't even like drugs because he said that, or what was his famous statement about religion? He says it is the opiate of humanity that drugs people into stupefaction. This is somebody that is very much of the earth, earthy. We have 4 minutes to look at the last chart. And before we look at the last chart, I have to make a disclaimer, because I've gotten myself into trouble, especially in South America, with this next chart. I am not anti-Catholic. I am pro-Catholic, because I think the world would be a worse place without the Catholic Church. Now, historically, the Catholic Church has had some people in and out of the formation that have done some not nice things. But so have we in the Rosicrucian Fellowship. Who are we to judge, and who are we to throw stones at anything? Now, it's just that people, whether they are in a religion or not, are prone to making great mistakes. We're going to look at a horoscope of a saint, a canonized saint. Now, I'm not opposed to saints. In fact, I am a very big fan of Padre Pio, because Padre Pio could do all the things we're trying to do. People would come to him for confession, and they would confess, and he was reading in the ethers, and he'd say, "Isn't there something more you want to confess?" And he would draw it out of them. And he was capable of leaving his physical body. And many people saw him in different parts of the world at different times. He was the real McCoy. This person, I'm not so sure about. I have several friends that are named according to her. This is Thérèse Lisieux, the little flower, a French sister who had visions and did miraculous things. Again, what we find is we find a lot of planets in Earth signs. I believe we find 4 planets in Earth signs again. The Sun, the central focus of self, and Saturn are in the Earth signs and in the fourth house. So this is somebody that is Earth-oriented. Taurus is on the cusp of the ninth house, so that her view of religion is very earth-oriented. But for her, it was form. The thing that she is respected for in the Catholic Church is that she was a reformer of the forms. She wanted to go back, and she wanted to re-firm up or simplify the forms back to the way they used to be. So she is, that's the thing that she is most beloved for. In this horoscope, Saturn is square to Neptune. And it's a pretty strong square. So we do see the depression. We do not see the Saturn-Uranus in this horoscope, but we do see the depression. Now, the ruler of Venus, of Taurus that we were just talking about is Venus. And Venus forms all sorts of aspects. Venus forms five aspects. And the strongest aspect in the entire horoscope by the closeness of orb is the sextile of Venus to Neptune. She was a visionary. She saw beautiful visions and she could bring them back. But to some extent, the material reality didn't match the visions. She has the Sun and Saturn in the fourth house, which draws her into a subjective view of things. And it's very hard to maintain objectivity. Now, this is not somebody that was bipolar, but this is somebody that retreats or escapes into a world that is beautiful and uses that to inspire people when she comes back, but she can't overcome the basic materialism, which is associated with all of the formalism and with a subjective personal view of the world that is quite material. And so she became consumptive. She became... Now, I happen to think that this is an unhealthy personality, saint or no saint. The way this all came about is I've had many girlfriends and it never works for me. But I started going out with this girl and she heard me talking about Christian mysticism. And so what she did is she said that... Oh, I have a book I'd like you to read. And it was the autobiography of Thérèse Lisieux. And I read it and I was outraged. She's really innocent. You know, the Capricorn is not always urbane and slick or something like that. There can be a very great innocence to it. She had that. But she was sick-minded. When she talks about the first time she coughed blood, she talks about that as if it were like her first communion or if it was like becoming a sister. This was a mark of attainment to be coughing blood with consumption. This meant that God must really love her. It was very hard for me to take. But at any rate, we can see what happens with people who become extremely earth-oriented, whether they are atheists like Karl Marx or whether they are mystic saints like Thérèse Lisieux. I don't doubt in the least that she didn't have beautiful spiritual experiences beyond what I'll ever have while I'm in this body. No doubt about that at all. But that doesn't mean that everything in her life is healthy and copacetic. All right, let's close with the Rosicrucian student's prayer. O God, increase our love for Thee, so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Thank you. 7:30.